We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of The Jane Austen Podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Holy crap! Happy New Year! It's 2019. Welcome to it. What a way for us to kick off 2019, Scoobies. We have a live episode from London coming right up after I stop yapping. The episode is about Faith and Buffy. Plus, today is also the day that we release our prom tickets in New York City for sale. So, like, it's almost too much. I understand if you, like, need to hit pause, take it, you know, inhale, exhale. I could walk us through a meditation right now, but I'm not going to do that. You do that on your own time. So let's talk about prom first. If you missed it, we're throwing a prom again this year, and this time it's happening at the Ace Hotel in New York City on March 9th, of course, in the year 2019. All of the details can be found by going to bufferingthevampireslayer.com/prom, and tickets will go up for sale at 9 a.m. Eastern Time today, January 9th. Now, here's a few more details about prom, okay? We're doing two things differently this year. First, we're selling a limited amount of combo tickets that will also cover you for a brunch with Jenny and I on the morning of March 10th. That's also happening at the Ace Hotel. You can grab one of those combo tickets while they last, and that will also cover the cost of your breakfast and coffee and tea and all that good stuff. And we will, of course, sit down and unpack how the evening went, how hard everyone prommed, etc. It's going to be very fun. Second, tickets to prom are $75 this year, and they come with a complimentary drink ticket. Now, we know that not everyone can afford a $75 ticket, so we've held back a section of tickets to donate to those who do not have the funds to cover the cost. If you can cover the cost on someone else's behalf, so either you're going to prom and you have an extra $75 to spare, or you live somewhere else and you want to donate a ticket, there is a ticket option to donate a ticket to somebody else. As those donated tickets come in, we will release them to those of you who apply for a donated ticket. If you're someone who wants to apply for that covered ticket, you can find the link to that form at bufferingthevampireslayer.com/prom. Please know that depending on interest and donated ticket counts, we won't be able to guarantee tickets to all of our applicants, but we will do our best to get as many of you in as we can. We are so excited about prom in New York City. Okay, you know I'm excited when I sing. Another thing we're really excited about, but I'm going to save you for more of my singing, is that in just 10 days, we're going to be in Seattle at PodCon. If you're coming out to see us at PodCon, we cannot wait. And heads up, we will be doing a live taping of Who Are You, which of course is the second part of this to be continued episode. That means you get two live episodes back to back, and all of them are full of Faith and Buffy. 2019 is off to a fucking banner start. That's right. I cursed in the intro. You can't stop me. Man. It's exciting. Okay, Seattle, one more thing for you. We are doing a meetup at Mopop on January 21st. That is a Monday at 11 a.m. At 11 a.m., we're going to head into the museum. We're going to see Mr. Pointy, the actual Mr. Pointy, who lives at inside of Mopop, as well as the other amazing exhibits they have going on at Mopop. And then at noon, we're going to convene in the lounge space at the museum to hang out for another hour. There's no cost to meet us at the lounge, so if you don't have the funds and or the time to meet us at 11 for the museum, you can also just come and meet us at noon. If you are coming to the museum, get there a little early to grab your tickets and check out the event page for a special secret discount code for your admission. All the details are, of course, up on our website, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. Just click on calendar, go to the 21st, click on that event, and you can get all of those details. Okay, friends, it is time for... So Mia from Brighton sent me this spooky news. I love when you send me spooky news. So please, if you find any news and it is of the spooky variety, email it to bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com. Okay? So the title of this article from The Independent is Vampire Killing Ritual Could Explain Prehistoric Skeletons Found in Yorkshire. Now, I'm not going to give you the whole thing, but you can Google that if you want to read the whole thing. But basically, two super bizarre prehistoric human burials were found in Yorkshire. Excavations near the town of Pocklington unearthed a pair of mysterious 3rd century BC Iron Age graves containing the skeletons of potentially high-status individuals. Now, these individuals, who they think were between the ages of 17 and 25, they think may have been killed twice or even 3 times. A detailed examination of the skeleton shows that probably after this human's death, the body was then exhumed and ritually pierced by spears, and also had received a potentially lethal blow to the forehead delivered with maybe a wooden club or a similar weapon. So the person writing this article, or maybe the scientist, I don't know who's reasoning, but they're like, here's some reasons. You know, he could have been a respected warrior who died of natural causes and not in battle. And so, like, they wanted to make sure that, like, he got to die a warrior's death, so they speared him. Or, like, here's another possibility. Maybe after death, like, he was feared. In many parts of the world, there's evidence for a tradition in which some corpses were systematically speared by sharp objects. And in parentheticals, they say those suspected, quote, vampires and other, quote, revenants. Here's what I want. Oh, there's a third possibility. Maybe they were put in the ground alive and then ritually murdered. That's all spooky. But what I want to tell the author of this article, let's see who the author is. What I want to tell you, David Keyes, is that probably they were just straight up vampires, maybe even zombies. Like, I get it, you're a scientist, and, like, you want to find the clear reasoning for this, but us here over in the land of Buffering the Vampire Slayer, we know how to scientifically denote a demon when we see one. And I want to say that I think these were some straight-up UK vampires, okay? Also, why are all of my spooky news stories from the UK? What's going on over there, you guys? So that's the spooky news for this week. Spooky news. Also, I know we're on the other side of the spooky news jingle, but listen. Somebody named Sinead wrote in to give us a little more information on a previous spooky news, the thousands of human teeth that were found in the walls. So recently in Sinead's house, there was plumbing work done, and the repairman opened the wall to find hundreds of razor blades hidden in it. So they looked it up and found that in the 50s, every medicine cabinet had a slot to put used razors in, but the slots just led to the inside of the wall. So they figured that that was a safe way to dispose of razors. And so Sinead wonders, perhaps it was a similar thing with dentists. Maybe they didn't know what to do with the teeth, and they figured putting them in the walls was convenient. So if you know more about this why are teeth in walls thing, listen, write in. Let me know. We all want to know. We all want to know about this spooky news. Okay, moving along, I'm going to tell you the award winners for the Sexual Tension Award from Goodbye, Iowa. Now, a couple of you were really upset that this was put in the intro last episode, and I want to say, like, I hear you. Jenny hears you. We hear you. You want the winners to be with the nominees. You like talking about it all together. You want to hear Jenny's response. We get it. We get it. The only reason that we put this up in the intro is because a lot of times we're recording out of order or we're doing a live episode, and so we can't get the winners in. So whenever we can get the winners in the episode, we will do that for you, you beautiful souls. But when we can't, I'm going to put them up in the intro. So listen, if you want to skip it, if you don't like it up here, I get it. But Goodbye, Iowa, we had a tie for last place. Xander and Riley came in with 19%. Adam and his hard drives came in at 19%. In, I guess, second place, yeah, would be Anya, Buffy, and Willow. They came in with 22% of the vote. And our winners for Goodbye, Iowa, not the first time they've won and probably not the last time they're going to win, are Tara and Willow. So a couple little things before we roll into this really fun episode. We did it at the Vampire Ball in London. We had so much freaking fun, and you're going to have a good time listening to it. But I just want to let you know that if you're a Patreon supporter of us, there's some bonus material. In a week or so, we're going to have a bonus video of this whole episode so you can watch us tape on stage at London. That will be for all of our patrons at any level, a dollar or higher. If you are a $10 patron, you got a mailbag last week, so that's fun. And if you are a $10 patron, you're also going to get the Q&A that happened after this episode. So we had several of you who came up and asked us questions after we did the live taping, some about the episode, some, you know, most of them about Faith and Buffy. So you'll get that little bonus episode as well if you're a $10 patron or higher. Last but certainly not least, thank you to Lauren Klein, our dutiful sound engineer. And you can follow Lauren if you want to know what sound engineers are up to in their everyday life at Lauren Taylor Klein on Instagram. Thank you all. Happy New Year. Holy shit. Let's get into some Faith and Buffy.
To Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in sweet, succulent, chronological order, spoiler-free. I am Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo, and this week we are talking about season 4, episode 15, This Year's Girl, Every Year's Girl, I say. Stay tuned at the end of the podcast for an original song written by us, recapping the episode we are discussing.
This Year's Girl was written by Doug Petrie and directed by Michael Gershman and originally aired February 22nd in the year 2000.
Damn it. I really wanted it to air on February 25th.
Why?
Because Faith, because that girl in the hallway is like, it's February 25th. And I was like, ooh, did they do it on the day that it aired?
No, they did it a few days before the 25th so that we would all have a warning that Faith was about to wake up. And we could avoid hospitals
always
at all costs.
Always thinking those writer's rooms.
Yes!
In case you missed it, this is the one with Faith. It's
Faith's back!
Yeah! This is the one where Faith, it says on IMDb, this is the one where Faith awakens from her coma and seeks revenge against Buffy, which it pretty much nails it.
Yes.
They leave out all the sexual tension, but they knew we'd be here.
To take care of it.
Yes.
So, previously on Boob Windows and Big Knives.
It's just like, can you give a cheer if you watched this episode in real time when it aired on television? Nice. I just like, because I didn't. And I, when I saw the previous line, I was like, oh my God, they must have all dropped dead immediately. Like, because you don't know, or maybe you did know, maybe you read the TV guide. Do you have the TV guide in London? We're in London, by the way.
Yeah, yes.
I was telling the people inside the microphone. So, could you imagine, like, finding this out in real time? You turn on your TV, you're like, 12, I don't know how old you were when you watched it. I was older, but I tried to make myself seem younger with that telling.
Nice, really
yeah.
Nice.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm Faith. We get the boob window, yeah?
Yes, the classic Faith boob window, backwards headbutt, and. Oh, the most beautiful thing you could ever hope for in a previously on, which is, of course, there's no way this girl's ever going to wake up from this coma. Which means she's gonna wake up from the coma.
She is. We also get some nice close-ups on the knife in the previously on, and I want to give a shout out to Lucy, who is in the audience somewhere. Where's Lucy? There's Lucy.
Hello, Lucy.
Lucy gave us. You don't even know why you're clapping. You don't even. Do you all know why you're clapping?
No, they just do what we say.
They're like, Lucy, yeah! Lucy gave Jenny and I the knife, the replica of the knife, the jackal,
as it's formally
we treasure
known.
so dearly. And we were so excited to get to meet Lucy in person. So now you can cheer for Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
We also get in the previously on. This is going to be like a lengthy episode because I have so many notes just in the previously on. We get what I now refer to as Riley's kink line, his favorite kink line of 2000. You're really strong.
I like it.
Yeah. Riley's moment of reckoning. We get a classic Adam. Mommy. Because, like, we'll never hear that enough. We will. I've heard it enough. And we get Maggie Walsh's, Lindsay Krause's favorite line, I think, some little bitch, which I heard you all chuckle at.
Politely, but you chuckled, you know.
So polite here. Everyone's so polite here. The intersection of a largely English crowd and Buffy fandom is possibly, like, that section of the Venn diagram is the most polite, I think, that it gets.
Yeah, which actually brings us, unless you have more notes on the previously on, Jenny.
My only note was boob windows, big knives. This girl's never going to repeat.
And there's our next t-shirt.
Yes.
Boob windows, big knives. So we roll out of the previously on right into the dream. One of two dreams.
Aren't there three?
Huh? Oh, there's three? Well, there's...
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
The
yeah.
bed. The picnic. The graveyard.
Well, but the graveyard, but she, isn't she, we'll get there. I have it as dream two, part one and part two.
Okay.
We'll discuss.
All right.
We'll argue. Maybe, if you're lucky.
But listen, they're working so hard to make that bed and the sheet is uneven. It's very stressful.
Yeah.
It's short on Faith's side and long on Buffy's side.
But I think they do a great job changing the sheets together, personally. The reason that I was, the segue that I was going to use, Jenny, was that we had a little fan meetup yesterday. And in the fan meetup, I was like, why are they changing the sheets, though? That's what I want to know. Pew, pew, pew. And everybody was so polite. And they were like, tee hee. And I was like, guys, because sex and sheets? And they were like, yeah, it's a little much for us. And I was like, okay.
We don't have sex here. Yeah. Like, as a concept, it does not exist.
But yeah, they're changing the sheets. Faith is, you know, knows that Buffy has a lot to prepare for, what with Lil Sis coming. Which
what
is,
could that mean?
I don't know. Yeah, what a weird thing to say. And my note of this scene is, oh man, you know that feeling when you like change the sheets with your gal pal, but then she guts you with your own knife? Classic!
Oh my God. Also, are you ever going to take this thing out? That's what... She said, literally. Uh-huh. She literally said that.
And then, of course, we cut to what I have called the Faith coma machine, because I'm a doctor.
Sure. That's definitely the technical term.
And her eyes are astir.
You know when you're, like, in a coma, but lightning is flashing while you're having a spooky, prophetic, possibly dream?
Yeah, well, that lightning's got to flash if it's going to rain later, so that,
sure,
you know, everybody can get all wet. Okay, I'll talk about that more when we get there.
Speaking of all wet,
my favorite segue.
Yeah. How about Xander using, coining the word
orgasmator?
Orgasmator.
How about Xander's freaking outfit?
So the shirt is too big and the sweater vest is too small, but also it's not really sweater vest shaped. It's more like a sweater with the sleeves cut off.
I just kind feel of thing. Like in this episode, they were like, can we make Willow and Xander look like the like funny pal friends? Like they just like are dressed so like, I mean, I know that like there is some dress, especially with Willow, but this like Xander in this outfit and then Willow in this like definitely, do you have
the
Chico's
bucket hat
here? You might not have Chico's here, but she definitely went to like.
Chico's is where Pat shops.
Yes. She went,
do you remember
this
Pat?
Is an outfit from Pat's closet. That's a perfect way of putting
thank
it.
Thank you.
Which is the sweater and then like the hat that looks like that game Simon from the 80s or the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
You know where that, right?
Simon sounds English. Maybe you guys have Simon.
They all laughed. I think they had Simon. No, you just laughed. Oh, you're so nice. You had Simon. Good.
Aha.
Great. Then we get this wonderful shot of Giles folding his boxers.
So inappropriate. I mean, just within the context, I know they're out of high school, but like still, who wants to watch Hot Work Dad fold his
I mean, a
under
couple
things.
People probably do, but...
But not... Those people are not Buffy, Willow, or Xander.
No, and I just
or
like,
Anya. Is Anya there?
Anya,
or is it just the three?
Anya is not there in this scene, but Anya is there, staying there, because I remember
She could walk in at any moment.
She could walk in at any moment. Why is Giles staying down there? Like, I know they're, like,
for
hiding.
For safety.
But, like, Wouldn't he get a hotel?
He's an adult man.
Yeah, he's an adult man, but we do get this boxer folding shot. And then Xander has this whole arc, which you all loved. We got to watch this episode with you, and you just loved the arc of Xander not being able to figure out the gun, electrocuting himself, which is sad.
Well, this is like a microcosm of the Zeppo. This is like the unseen trials and tribulations of Xander. He often goes unappreciated. We tend to rag on Xander with, I think, good reason. But he also is always working hard, sometimes in the background, sometimes to his physical detriment.
Yeah.
I don't know what happens once you get electrocuted with a blaster. Well, probably
Xander,
nothing good.
Xander survived it and just had this very, like, we're in season four now and I know my place kind of look on his face. Like, he's used to no one noticing him. Also, just a slight note. Giles is sleeping downstairs in the Xander household, which means that Mrs. Xander is...
Mrs. Xander?
That's how it works.
Okay.
She's sleeping upstairs, and I'm just wondering if they have shared any fruit punch or any other pleasantries during this extended stay. Just wondering. I don't know if I'll ever get the answer. Speaking of wondering about sexy things, then we cut to a beautiful shot of Riley's pecs. Jenny, how you feeling?
Okay, so here's something that I've been meaning to bring up for a while now. It seems that no men on this show have armpit hair.
Mm.
Angel seems to be hairless.
Yeah.
Riley seems to be hairless.
Yeah.
I'm wondering whose decision that was.
I mean, these are also the men that Buffy is interested in, so maybe it's part of her.
Is it her thing? Is it somebody on staff
right.
who's creating the world and is like, God made a mistake?
I'm really glad you brought up Angel too, because to me, I was like, oh, this is like, normally we see Angel having difficulty buttoning his shirt. And what we've learned here is that Riley is able to button his shirt. And both things result in us seeing their full chest. So,
hooray! Yeah. Victory!
Someone who is really into seeing Riley's whole chest is Forrest, who literally, I can't with Forrest. Like, we kind of like teased it a little early, like before it got like, you know, in our faces.
This is powerful.
A shish kebab that walks like a man, he says, as he like ogles Riley from behind. It's like his version. Can you do like a high-pitched sexy whistle? I can't whistle.
Like.
Yes. It was. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you were out whistled.
I think it's called a wolf whistle.
Yeah, this is Forrest's version of a wolf whistle. Graham comes along and is, my note for Graham in this scene is, so timid, so fair. He's just always so nice.
Yeah, Graham is very mellow.
Right?
Whereas Forrest is like, don't even tell me you're going to see that girlfriend. Like, where do you think he's going, dude?
Yeah, Forrest
is
like,
are you crazy? If you had a girlfriend, that... I think.
Forrest?
Yeah.
Forrest is
definitely. Forrest is clearly in love with Riley, and that is painful for him. But I'm just saying, if their positions were reversed,
yes,
it's only natural that you would want to go see your girlfriend after you were in the emergency ward having your kebab shished.
Lovely.
You would want to go get your other kebab shished? I should go.
Yeah, right. So Forrest is like, wah, 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 have sex with me, not with her. Then this beautiful zoom. This is like one of my favorite parts of the whole episode, where it's like crack of thunder, flash of lightning, camera pans down to Faith. We see the sunrise or set. Who knows? It's glowing in the sky. It's just like, you know, I mean, I guess when a Slayer comes out of a coma, it's a big deal. Like, for even if it wasn't like a big deal to us because we want Faith to be back out of a coma, like, it just seems like there's some forces at play.
Something like elemental?
Elemental,
okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. So now we go to dream number two, which I think continues into...
Or whatever, part two of the dream sequences.
No. This is a separate dream.
Okay.
This is the... It's important that I demarcate where dream one begins and ends in dream... So dream two, we get... The mayor's back. Aww. Isn't it so great to see Harry Groener again?
Truly. Oh,
what a dream. It's like ever since... So I had the chance to sit down with Harry and talk to him when we were back in season three before his unfortunate demise and change into a snake. And like, it's so weird to talk to people who play like evil characters and then are just really, really nice people, because I just can't ever trust them completely. And it's not their fault. It's just a hazard of the trade, I guess. But so now when I see him on screen, I'm like, oh, he's so nice. That's my whole story.
He's also being really nice. They're just like having a lovely day. Lovely picnic.
This is very, and Faith is dressed as the mayor wanted her to dress in this dream. Yeah. Oh, I guess that means it is three dreams. God damn it. Ha-ha! She's dressed differently in the third one. Check.
Three dreams.
They're sharing like a PB&J, I think, perhaps.
Or something, yeah. And there's a little snake.
A little snake, which is like, this is like an Adam and Eve reversal, I think. Like, Adam and Eve were like there for the creation of the world. Or whatever in the story. And then, like, you know, now, like, these two were, like, attempting to end the world. And, like...
Sure, also the mayor became a snake.
Yeah, well, I know, but, like, I just... This is what happens when I watch the episode 7,000 times.
You're, like, beautiful nuances. And I'm, like, mayor was a snake!
Yeah. The mayor says something to Faith. He says, "You're too young and too pretty a girl to start wearing any worry lines on your face."
How dare.
To which I say,
"Oh, is it time already? So soon."
Excuse me.
The patriarchy!
Tight.
No, but question number one about... No, I have so many questions. But why does Faith crawl on her hands and knees?
No. What? Why cheesecake at a picnic?
Okay, yeah, that's solid. Yeah, but, I mean, we've learned that the mayor leaves his milk out, so...
True, yes, he's a big room temperature dairy kind of guy. He is impervious,
the epitome of evil,
at a certain point.
I think.
So... Right, Buffy kills the mayor in this dream, and then Faith is crawling because it's a dream, and that's what happens sometimes when you're in a dream.
Yeah.
This is the point... Oh, sorry.
No, it's just in my sequence, she crawled to the graveyard and then started running. That's how her clothes changed.
Yeah. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
So the thing is that the point... at this point in the episode, a plane flies overhead. Kate Bush is like, paused for the jet. And I'm wondering, has Faith just been having like this kind of dream for the last 8 months? Or is she like surfacing slowly? Regardless, wow, she's gonna wake up real messed up.
Yeah. Well, she was been having this dream and then dreams about cigars and tunnels was what she said, right?
Is that like a sex thing?
I think so.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Someone is very certain.
Yeah. So then Buffy debuts, I think, her leopard print coat. Into the woods she goes to discover this flayed demon.
Adam's taking bio 2 right now.
Yeah.
So big dissection requirement.
Pretty rough.
In that class.
I don't like demons, but I really don't like seeing demons
Who ever wants to see a chest cavity flayed open and pinned, especially
just Adam
to hang it up. Yeah, just Adam, pretty much, I think.
So the Scoobies are like, plan.
Yeah, Buffy's like, Saving Private Riley.
Yeah. I love when you get to like the line that you've been waiting to get to. Right, and they're like, Willow, hack the initiative. Xander, keep working on that gun. And then Riley is like, guys, don't worry about it. I'm right here. And you know what? A surprise for everyone. When I watch this episode, I'm really excited when Riley walks in.
Well, how the worm has turned!
It might have been the pecs earlier in the episode. Mm. I don't know what happened.
You're just so thankful for a man who knows how to keep his shirt buttoned. Well, at long, sweet last.
But yeah, I don't know. He's just a real hunk. I think they put him in like bigger shirts this episode to make him look a little like, because he's like sick and like recovering or whatever. And I feel like the way that they helped visually cue us is like his shirts are a little baggier, and maybe I'm into that. Anyway, it's a moment. Savor it while it's here. It will be gone as quick as it arrived. And now, dream number 3.
Unless this is some like Michael Myers shit. This is some classic horror, slow walk, knife up, steady. No need to hurry. I'll get to you in time.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe. Buffy the creepiest does a good, of all horror or walks.
Buffy, Sarah Michelle Gellar does a good job with that slow walk.
Yeah, it's real creepy, scary. I don't want that
and she,
following me personally.
Faith falls into an open grave, like you do.
How can you have a dream and not fall into an open grave?
Classic. And Buffy sort of like pin drops into the grave, which is also really creepy. And then it starts raining and everything gets all wet. And this... So the reason that I feel that it's not stretching is because when Angel and Buffy first had sex...
That's true.
It rained and we talked.
They were all wet.
We talked for a long time about how they were all wet for the rain. So I just feel like, you know, tit for tat over here. Tit for tit.
Goodness.
Faith crawls out of the grave. And then she has this moment. I don't know if you're familiar with the film I Know What You Did Last Summer. But like she's literally like, what are you waiting for? And I had this memory watching the episode and I looked it up. I was like, oh, let me look it up because I remembered it in the rain. It's not in the rain. And there was Sarah Michelle Gellar standing right behind Jennifer Love Hewitt in this movie that came out in 1997. So I just had a nice moment with that.
She's like taking notes. Got it.
Yeah,
got it.
Yeah. Look, yeah. She's like, save this. 3 years. Use it in my hit show, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Mm-hmm. And then...
Also, wait, I think it's worth noting before before Buffy, I think, pin drops, we're seeing Faith from above in the grave. And obviously the show, I think the show does dream sequences like no other show. It's so great. I keep putting my tongue on this mic pop filter by accident. I am so sorry to everyone else at the convention. Faith has her hands on the sides of the grave, and the shot just kind of like lingers for like longer than it needs to establish anything, and she's kind of just like moving her hands like awkwardly, and it feels like so like extra dreamlike. And I just wanted to draw attention to that because it's not sexy and there's no joke, but now I said the thing that I liked, and there you go. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that.
Well,
I think at the end of the series, and maybe one of you can be diligent enough to keep track of this, but I think at the end of the series, we should have a poll for like the best dream sequence.
Sure.
Of all, because they're all incredible, and you are correct. So then... You know, after Faith crawls out and is like, what are you waiting for? We go to the hospital.
Oh my God, she's waking up. She was never supposed to wake up.
But she did it.
They said it couldn't be done, but it's been done.
Dave, will you please play the Faith jingle?
She's from Boston, keeps it spot and doesn't need any frills. Seems like she's the only one who's taking care of herself. Don't call her loser, she's a bruiser with the power and skill. But the demons deep inside her are the hardest to kill. Faith!
Ta-da! Thank you, Dave!
Yeah, thank you. Jenny just said, I forgot there was a Faith jingle, and I was so excited for this episode because we gave Faith her jingle at the end of her time in season 3.
Yeah.
And so, like, we haven't been able to give her song, and I'm gonna at least give it to her twice, which is... Thank you for picking up on my innuendo.
Listen.
What?
Nothing.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hey guys, it's Kristen. You might know me from listening to the podcast that you're listening to right now, or at least hosting some of the podcasts that happen in this feed. I just wanted to let you all know, in case you didn't already, that in addition to talking about 90s television, I also run a couple of other very cool projects, if I do say so myself. I host a queer horror movie club and a little queer book club. Basically, I take anything that I like and make it very gay, and then I do it together with all of you. This summer is an especially vampiric summer in Queer Horror Movie Club, so I wanted to especially take a moment to let you know, because on June 1st, which is right around the corner, we are going to be watching Bram Stoker's Dracula together, June 1st at 8 p.m., and then in August, we're watching A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. What are we doing in July? We're watching another movie. It's called Blood Diner. I'm not quite sure that it's about vampires. I've never seen it, but it is going to be a campy, bloody good time as well. You can learn all about my queer horror movie club at kristinnoline.com, KristinNoeline. It's open to all of my patrons. I hope to see you this summer watching some queer horror films and or reading some queer books.
Okay. We go to the hospital.
Well, turns out that 8 months in a coma will not atrophy the muscles of a slayer.
That's my note.
Nice note.
I mean, listen, you can't, even a slayer, I think, after 8 months would have a little bit of a stumble. Like, I know they recover quickly, but this seems intense.
I agree.
Also, we get a good old IV rip. I love anytime someone rips an IV out of their arm in this show.
I'm pretty sure I've watched you rip an IV out of your hand. Is that accurate?
It is accurate.
Yeah, okay. Kristen can't abide an IV.
It was actually the last time we did a live taping and watched the episode. I had, remember? I had ripped an IV out of my arm, and that was the episode. Shit. Oh, God. We got to be careful. Okay.
Well, you were just your mother.
Oh, well.
That's just for us. It happened. You were just like, oh, shit.
Hey, it happens to the best of us, you know?
Truly.
Listen, I have a bone to pick with the fucking Sunnydale Hospital. What are they doing? Where have they put faith, and or can someone please give funding to this hospital?
She's in the, these girls will never wake up coma wing. There's no, like, lights in the hallway, but somehow the teddy bear sweater girl has wandered in. And can you imagine looking for your friend that you want to give a teddy bear to in the hospital and then seeing Faith in her state in that moment and being like, here's the person I should ask for directions. This seems fine.
And then can you imagine continuing on a conversation with them? Oh, well, you know, graduation. I mean, I shouldn't tell you, but, like, what? This girl,
but everyone's dead.
I know. I really liked this girl. I was like, let me see what else she did. And I went to her IMDb page, and it was like, known for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Visitor. And I was like, okay, well, this is her one role. But yeah, I don't understand why she talks to Faith, but she, of course, tells her the facts that Faith needs to know, which is that the mayor has perished.
This is so sad. I mean, if I was Faith, I would be so sad.
It is sad. It is sad. And then Faith beats her up and takes her clothes. I would have been more into this if Faith was like, I don't know, but you want to go to, like, check out that broom closet? And then, like, walked out in her clothes, but, you know.
Oh, that's another way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, but it was the year 2000, and things weren't as easily made gay yet.
Sure, also, she's, I think, just kind of primed for violence right now.
True.
Oh my gosh.
Are you going to talk about this voiceover before you go to?
Yeah, hell yes. I'm going to talk about this voiceover.
Well,
while we're still looking at Faith, we hear Buffy's voiceover. You know, I never stopped thinking about you. And we're like, yeah, nice. Beautiful.
Oh, God. It makes me so happy in a way that almost seems unhealthy, but I'm here for it.
But unfortunately, she's talking to Riley.
Yeah, but, like, is she? Every time she, like, says something to Riley in this episode, I'm like, but who are you talking to? Because that happens again later. We'll get there. Riley loves this fucking bandana so much.
Oh, my gosh. As some of you may know, we've begun a new segment, which is, of course, look at the size of Mark Lucas's hands on Sarah Michelle Gellar's body. Oh, God, they're huge. And that carries over nicely to this scarf, which looks like a Band-Aid on his hand. His huge hands.
To give him a little bit of, what do you call it, context, though, this was a stupid bandana. It's not an actual bandana. You know, it's a lady bandana.
A stupid bandana.
Yeah.
A lady bandana.
It's a lady bandana.
It's definitely decorative. You don't want to tie it around your head and be Rambo.
Right. It's like, right? It's like, you know how they, like, put, like, it's like razors, and then it's like razors for her. In the 90s, it was like bandanas, and then it was like bandanas for her, and they were like, had like a rubber band, and I was like, fuck that shit. Yeah.
Okay.
I can curse. Okay, so then, right, Buffy's like, I quit the council and, you know, trying to, like, counsel I didn't do that on purpose. Trying to counsel Riley through his confusion. Yes, Jenny.
No, please, Sally.
And this is sad. And maybe this is, like, why I have a bit of a soft spot for Riley right now is because we just came out of Riley, like, having his entire universe flipped upside down, which I have a real spot for.
Yeah, I'm a soldier. Take that away. What's left?
That's a nice man. I know.
A nice man with huge hands. Also, two things.
Yeah,
sorry,
please.
If you're good on the identity crisis.
I'm good. Yeah, okay. I'm good.
Riley's watch, I don't know if you guys have Fossil here.
All of our American listeners are like, wow, so most of the episode is going to be us asking the audience, do you have this here?
Riley is definitely wearing a Fossil or a Fossil ripoff watch. It is a huge leather wristband with a little face. I mean, it's probably pretty huge because it's on his enormous wrist and hand, but it is very distinctly of its era. And furthermore, for somebody who's like, I haven't slept in 3 days. Oh no, Adam. Oh God, he must be stopped. Buffy sure is hanging out in everybody's bedrooms a lot in this episode.
Hey, you gotta have time to play, you know? Just like,
no,
it's important.
By her own, put the words out of her mouth is that she had no time to play.
But, and this brings us to the next moment in this scene where she like straddles Riley and starts kissing him and then searches for a chip in his head. So she might have had like a reason to get him in like a sexy place so she could like secretly search for the chip just to make sure.
Or maybe that's her kink.
Oh, you know what I thought is that like, so we've talked about, you haven't heard the episode yet, but we'll get there. We've talked about the incredible sex scene between Riley and Buffy, which involves the removal of a boot slowly. Ooh, yeah. And I thought perhaps... I thought maybe the director was like, all right, let's try something new. I'm going to tell Sarah to look for Chip in Mark's head because then it like will either be really sexy or it'll be like sort of sexy, but it won't matter because there's this other reason for it, you know?
Right.
They struggle a little bit with the chemistry after we like had soul-losing chemistry a couple seasons ago.
It's really hard to top forbidden love.
Yes. So we go back to the hospital for this quick little thing. All the doctors in Sunnydale look the same. I thought this was the initiative doctor when it first like rolled up on his face. And I was like, what is going on? And then the suit guy is like, how could you possibly have left a person in a coma in this horrible wing of the hospital? And then we find out the girl was beat up. And then this creepy nurse is like, I'm making my call on this one phone placed perfectly so that we don't need another shot.
Good thing I was on shift.
Yeah, seriously. Faith longingly looks at what once was Sunnydale High School, then stumbles down State Street in a daze.
Yes.
There's this like weird little moment that happens in this quick scene where a dad and his daughter are going to the movies, which I feel is very intentional. She's like, Dad, we're not like we're running late.
Yeah, that feels,
you know, to underline that Faith has lost her dad, her watcher dad, the mayor.
And then like Spike before her, Faith takes a moment to stare in a Sunnydale window.
No, she doesn't stare into it yet. That's later.
I'm so...
She just literally can't wait.
Sorry.
When Jenny watched the episode, she texted me like 5 minutes into watching it and was like, is this not the episode where she stares in the window?
I
was like,
no. This the window of Giles's house.
Oh.
It's almost as though you don't listen sometimes.
I just have more information about another window.
Yeah. We'll get to the other window. Don't worry about it.
Yes. Faith stares into a window. Continue.
Right. Because Buffy's in there talking to Giles and the whole crew.
We find out that Adam has to charge.
The council still calls Giles to... What?
We find out that Adam has to charge.
Adam has to charge?
Yeah. Riley's like, well, he probably has to charge. And I died because I just imagined Adam being like, am I a man or a monster? And then being like, one moment, please. Sitting down and like plugging himself into the wall. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So she is like watching them getting the lay of the land. Oh, Buffy has a new butterscotch boyfriend. Interesting. Oh, they're talking about all this stuff. Then they get the call. The council still has Giles' phone number, and that's where they look for Buffy. No indication when he picks up the phone whether the person on the other line is obviously British.
Mm-hmm.
But I would assume Giles getting a call from a British person who then asks for Buffy would be, I don't know, something.
Okay, that because I was like, why doesn't Giles ask who is calling for Buffy? You think he just knows that it's the council?
He probably knows other British people, but
right.
Buffy doesn't.
Yeah, maybe he assumes, because it is weird that he doesn't ask, like, oh, you're calling this person at my house? Who are you?
Also, and Jenny's like, they know about me, and then she disappears into the darkness.
Yeah, she also has a moment, like you were like, Faith looks in and sees butterscotch boyfriend and is like, blah. But like, she looks in and sees butterscotch boyfriend is like, heard about it. She's butthurt, you know? She's like, another boyfriend.
I don't think they say butthurt here.
oh, it's a thing. also, there's this whole moral conversation that happens, right?
Right. What do we do with Faith
if
and when we apprehend her? She can't go, like, the police don't know what to do with her. She doesn't belong in jail. The council's clearly proved itself not helpful.
Right. The Scooby gang has their opinions.
And
Willow.
Buffy is, of course, like, she's my responsibility. And is this kind of...
Well, because Buffy has left the council, I think Buffy feels it's her responsibility to deal with Faith because she doesn't, like, she is her own boss, you know?
Sure, but she also is completely not equipped
to handle Faith.
I think so. Well,
yeah, I mean, but she doesn't
handle Faith, but she's not equipped to, like, rehabilitate Faith or, like, whatever the grand design is meant
right.
to be.
But I think she doesn't know, right? Because it's like this thing that we all do as people, I think. We perceive others how we behave, and, like, the things we do is what informs us. And so I think that for Buffy, like, in the moment where she's, like, maybe she's sorry, like, Faith isn't sorry, right? I mean... Whatever, deep down Faith is sorry, but that's because I'm me and I would be sorry, so I want to believe that she's sorry.
I think Faith is sorry deep down. Come now.
Well, I mean, I don't think that she's going to pop out of a coma and be sorry. Like, I think that would be a quick progression. But Buffy, I think, no, you disagree?
I don't know.
All right, well, we'll talk
about
it another
time. What's important is that this goes on for like 5 minutes, and then there's a beautiful pause, and then Riley's like, who's Faith?
Right. Also, not to overlook the Scoobies' concerns, Willow being like, we should beat her up. And Xander being like, but
who is she doing?
Yes. On brand for everyone. Willow, speaking of on brand, is wearing a shirt where three people are in bed on her shirt, I think. I don't know what's happening there. They have this little conversation back and forth about like Riley and like, what did you tell him? I told him Faith was my like wacky cousin. I didn't tell him about all that sex we had. And wow, then Buffy's like, if I were Faith, step, step, step. And then Faith is like, you're not me. And we all scream. And Dave, we play the Faith jingle again.
She's from Boston, keeps it spot and doesn't need any frills. Seems like she's the only one who's taking care of herself. Don't call her loser, she's a bruiser with the power and skill. But the demons deep inside her are the hardest to kill. Faith!
There she is again.
Check you out, B. Big girl on campus is really working for you. That's not part of my erotic novel. But I do have one. And I want to say, did somebody boo? Or did you just say, ooh? I was like, wow, an opposition to the erotic novels. You all cheered when the erotic novel happened while you were watching the episode, and I was so proud that we all share the same feelings. My erotic novel is, so let's have another go at it. See who lands on top. Thank you. Thank you so much. Takes a lot of creative skill and natural talent to write
this. My erotic novel for this episode is still, are you ever going to take this thing out?
It's just like, it's a very particular kind of sexy.
It writes itself, really. Wow, so they just exchange all of this like very charged banter. Right?
Also, Faith has a line that I love. Well, it's a kind of a combo line where Buffy's like, Faith, these are innocent people. And she's like, no such animal. And I'm like, yeah, say it again. B,
because she's sexy, but also because she's right. There is no such animal.
Sure.
As an innocent human. None of us are innocent.
Well.
Bringing the deep thoughts. Well, maybe the babies are innocent.
Pippa, innocent. Yeah.
Pippa, for those of you listening, is an adorable baby who is at convention and has dressed up as Buffy. And
I've held her many times.
As have I. We love Pippa. Anyhow, we get back.
It's wild, like, how heavily Faith is, like, harping. It's not wild. We know. But objectively, it's a little wild how hard she's harping on the fact that, like, oh, you stabbed me to save your boyfriend, but you're not even dating him anymore. You jumped on the first college beef stick you could find.
Yep. Jenny has stood up.
Beef stick! She called Riley a beef stick. Okay.
Jenny has sat down.
Thank you.
Yes, I actually think
I wonder why she would be harping so much on who Buffy is dating and was dating and is dating now.
Yeah, because that's what gal pals do. They're just palling around, thinking about each other's boyfriends all the time.
Sure.
Also, Jenny, you know how you had that shirt that said, I love hunks?
Yes.
I would like to make you one that says, I love college beef sticks.
That it may be a bridge too far. It's embarrassing enough to wear I love hunks out of context.
So then we get this really sexy fight.
Fight.
Yeah, and they're like fighting. Willow tries to get the backpack to Faith's head before the fight begins. And my favorite part about that is when Faith calls her red.
Oh, yeah, hot.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. this is really small note, but like if you go back and you watch the episode, maybe you already noticed it, but I get a real kick out of the two college dudes who are standing on the staircase behind their fight. They're like, whoa. Just like, this is some serious fighting happening. Yeah, and then like the cops are there and Faith is like, you took my life, B, payback's a bitch. And then she like throws a cop and then she throws another cop and then she jumps over the fence.
But also you left out the fact that Faith is like, payback's a bitch. And Willow's like, look who's talking.
Willow! Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Speaking of Willow, these witches. These fucking witches. You said, okay, yeah, go ahead. Cheer them, cheer them. Hey, Jenny, you know who needs a fucking jingle? Willow and Tara.
Ooh, okay.
Willow and Tara. Okay. Willow and Tara. Okay. Willow and Tara. Okay. Willow and Tara. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
God.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I'll do it.
You said recon like you're a cool monster fighter, says Tara to Willow. And then it gets so sexy.
Oh, yeah, so sexy, like, when Tara's like, this is how people punch. But she looks like a small dog that's been dropped in water, you know? Yeah.
For those of you listening at home, Jenny and I just mimicked Tara, but Jenny did it like a Labrador retriever doing the dog paddle, I think.
Yeah,
swimming. Willow gets to call Faith a cleavagey slut bomb, which normally we'd be, well, maybe you have thoughts on it. Normally I feel like I'd be like, Willow, don't slut shame. But I'm like, yeah, Willow, call her a cleavagey slut bomb. I'm just, listen, sometimes your emotions get the best of you, you know? And then somebody yesterday, we were signing things and we were talking about 5x5 with somebody.
Mm.
And they were like, I just learned what that meant. And I feel so embarrassed that I did not know. And I said, don't feel embarrassed, because in the very episode we are discussing tomorrow, we find out that in the universe, they don't know what the hell Faith is talking about. Willow says, you know, that's the thing. No one knows what 5x5 means. Anyhow, shall we go to an alley?
Oh my God.
Ooh, this is the part where we get to talk about a scene that has a character who's also in the building with us.
But before he emerges from the shadows,
yes.
Xander is having a very important monologue that Giles is listening to in rapt attention. If Faith finds out Mr. Xander Harris is in town, odds are she goes tighter than catgut.
What? What? Well, I didn't even hear that line. I'm taking it in for the first time.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Tighter than catgut. It's unclear if that's a good thing, a bad thing, a sexy thing, an unsexy thing. Unknown.
Also, Giles rolling his eyes at Xander is a mood. Like, it just, like, I want to put it in a bottle and sell it as perfume or something,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Also, Xander can't be held responsible for the effect he has on women. Accurate. accurate in a variety of ways. There's a whole spectrum from Speedo to slut shaming. The Xander Harris story.
So then a certain peroxide vampire lights his cigarette in the dark of an alley, to which I say, Dave, will you play the Spike jingle, please?
Spike, I love you, Spike, so dreamy. Spike, you trench coat. Spike, I love you, Spike, you black man. Spike, peroxide.
Yeah!
Ta-da!
Oh, yes. And this is amazing. This is the first time, maybe it's not the first time, but to me, it seems like the first time that we have seen Spike act, right? Like, Spike is pretending, which is a thing we've seen Angel do, and Angel believes he is an incredible...
Thespian Angel.
Yes, Thespian Angel is a whole thing. And Spike is like, somebody's after you? Tell me about it. And they're like, it's this girl, and her name's Faith, and she's yay tall. And then, of course, he's like, I'm gonna go find her and fucking show her where you are, you fucking idiot. When it's like he has... a point. What is happening to them? I know that they...
No, there's mixed messages going on a rolling basis.
Yeah, I agree with you. There are. And I also agree that Spike fucking loves the Scoobies and, like, loves everybody and has a tender heart and I love him. Okay. But they are fighting evil. So I just feel like you need to keep a little bit more of a distance, you know, a little bit more of your guard up than they are. Although they realize it when Xander, of course, says, we're dumb. And then flap, flap, flap of a chopper. That would have been a great time for another airplane from Heathrow to go by.
Sure.
And now we get to the window I thought you were talking about before, Jenny.
Yes, back on State Street. Faith is staring
That's
longingly.
Faith's memoir title.
Back on State Street. Back on State Street, Faith is staring longingly into the window of the sporting goods store where she and Buffy once did some very homoerotic crime together.
Yeah, she was like, want, take, have. And then she was like, are you ever going to take this thing out?
She's also staring at this collection of Gustafsson precision blades.
Ooh, you said Gustafsson so nicely.
Thank you. I don't know if that's correct, but hey. But they're all so much smaller than Faith's knife.
Yeah. I mean, Faith definitely has the best knife. But also, where did she get her clothes? Like, what girl did those clothes come from?
Oh, what is she? Is she wearing leather pants?
She's back to... Yeah, I don't know if they're
Maybe
leather...
Maybe she had a stockpile... somewhere.
Just hidden, like, under a bridge in Sunnydale.
Or the mayor had, like, a storage unit or something.
Which, listen, I'm skipping ahead because I have shit to talk about before. Well, you know, we'll just get there. The fucking demon comes and Faith kills him, which is a bummer.
This guy's classic Faith.
Classic Faith, but just he's just doing
Literally
his job.
Killing the messenger.
Yeah. And then the messenger's like, yo, here... Well, the messenger's dead, but in his dying, I would believe he would say, here's this tape that the mayor made for you. And then she climbs a fucking ladder to a VCR room. What?
She also, like, her feet, like, just managed to escape the rolling beam of the police officer's flashlight. Police officers are always shining high-powered flashlights that are handheld down alleys.
Sunnydale. I mean, Sunnydale, they're, like, watching out for demons, so they have different kind of tricks.
Right.
They're also doing a horrible job. So then in the I label all of the rooms where the things happen, and this is labeled, in quotes, VHS room.
True.
The mayor, he's like,
Dad.
Oh, the mayor's so great. Who here loves the fucking mayor? I mean, I know you
sure.
all do.
Just like, there's things not to love about the mayor, but there's so much to love
about
the mayor.
No, but I mean, just like as a villain, wow. Just such a great
so
villain.
Great.
The mayor's like, you can't live without me, which like he means like eternally, but this is kind of like a rough message. Like, Dad.
I find it, like, I thought it was very, very real, very paternalistic, very, like, literally, like, I mean, I think, I can't say for, I mean, people that you love,
mm-hmm.
that are closer to you, specifically, like, think about your parents, I'm so sorry to do this to you and everyone, but think about your parents dying, right?
Okay, great.
That's the thing that, like, really, I think, seals more than anything else, like, the reality of your mortality.
Yes.
Right? A generational shift. So he's, like, giving her these, like, real deep, dark messages.
But he says there's no place in the world for her.
Well, that's his view,
I know,
right?
But I just...
Because they had such a tight bond. Like, that was her family.
But don't you think that if, like, my dad made me a video to watch after he died, he wouldn't be like, well, and now there's nothing left for you. Come on, man. Like, I mean, I get part of it. And, like, I think part of it is, uplifting for Faith, you know, to be like, oh, we loved each other and, like, we had something and he gets it. But I just feel like he could have given her a little bit more than the fidget spinner is all I'm saying. That's what I call the... thing. It's a fidget spinner.
Some hope and a fidget spinner.
Yeah, so be careful with your fidget spinners. You might just, who knows what. Anyway, so moving along from the VHS room, I've written down from my, this isn't this watch, but the watch before, she's a very dangerous woman. And then there's a little arrow and it says, my sexuality is Buffy saying this about Faith. So I guess I had like a real moment with it up in my hotel room when I was like, she's a very dangerous woman. Say it again. And then my buzz was immediately killed when I found out that Riley lines up his tiny basketballs in a line on his desk.
Yeah, but then what about when Riley was like, I've never seen anybody get under your skin this way before.
What did she do to you? Exactly.
Tell me in detail, yes. Very slowly.
Point by point. And Buffy's like, nothing. It's a long story. How long? You know what I mean? Okay. My next note is, knocky, knocky, Joyce. Really?
Knocky, knocky.
Yeah. I just love...
Upon the door?
Upon the door. Yeah. Knocky, knocky.
Oh, probably the last time that, like, Faith knocked on the door and Joyce answered it, it was Christmas in Amends.
I know. That's immediately.
Oh, my God. Here are some gifts. They're crappy.
Also, they spent Christmas night together. Remember?
And like, now she's just going to punch her in the face.
I just feel like they had something, you know? They still kind of do have something.
There's something here.
Yeah,
for
there,
sure.
There definitely is. Hi, Joyce. She punches her in the face. Then she's trying on her lipsticks. And she's like, Burgundy Skyline. Harlot, way to go, Joyce. And Joyce is like, yeah, I bought it when I started book club. I don't know.
I don't know what got into me.
Oh, Faith gives the mirror a nice kiss in her Harlot lipstick. Where is that mirror from the set is what I say.
Indeed.
And Joyce is fucking, we haven't seen Joyce. Like, am I right or am I right? Not enough Joyce up to this point in season
Not
four.
Enough Joyce. I think at this point, when we talked to her, I think she told us that she was living in Italy this year.
All right.
Think,
so Joyce
which
was
is why
like,
she's not around so much.
She's having a good time in Italy.
Having a blast.
With her art museum. She had big business.
No.
I know. Oh. I know. I understand the difference between the actor and their character.
Okay.
Sort of. but yeah, I just love her. She holds her fucking own in this whole scene, right? She's like, Faith is like, how do I look? And Joyce is like, psychotic.
Yeah, she's so tough.
Yeah, which like Faith kind of is into. She's like, all right, I was going for this, but I'll take psychotic. And then the line, actually, I was thinking my daughter is going to kill you soon. Like, fuck yeah, Joyce. Joyce is like really accepted her Slayer daughter, you know?
So like, beautiful.
Sometimes it takes four seasons for a mom to get it, and she's there. She knows what's up.
But yeah. Faith has this, like, really, I mean, she's, like, peeling back more and more layers to this thing that she's feeling about Buffy. You think you're part of something, and then you get dumped. Mm-hmm. And she has this whole, like, animals in the tar pits sinking slowly. Like, geez, yeah. Faith. Get a live journal.
Yeah. Oh my God, someone please make a live journal for Faith. Probably that exists, right? Probably somebody did that.
Yeah,
too busy with her new boy toy to give a single thought to people who matter. Before we get to the beautiful piece of this episode, I just want to ask one question, which is why are letters being sent 3 miles to, it just seems.
You don't update your mailing address when you go to college.
But they're three miles
down the road.
Right. Like, I just find...
What kind of mail do you think Buffy is getting? You know what I mean? You think she's getting anything time sensitive, or is it like...
From the council, they're like, this is not okay. Third warning. Not allowed to go rogue. But yeah, I just thought this was a funny little twist. Now, the window may break, and in will come Buffy. And
hooray!
This is like one of my favorite, at least to date, Buffy Joyce moments. Hi, Mom. You know, like, just like, hi, Buffy. Hi, Mom. Because it's just, I don't know, I feel like maybe Buffy hasn't been visiting very much, but like, they love each other so much. They're a team. They've got each other's backs. Remember when they sat on the couch in their white scrunchy socks and had like a birthday moment?
It was very sad.
It was, but like, it's just really sweet. And I love it. The end. That
beautiful.
Was a novel that was not erotic. It was that was my first sentimental novel.
Beautiful. So nice.
Okay.
So they fight and 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 they're taking moments to have some banter. Oh God, she just can't get off the boyfriend thing. Oh, butterscotch. Meh. Faith is like, maybe I'd like to sample some butterscotch. And Buffy is like, he's not big on sleaze. And Faith is like, he's probably never tried it, which is such a great way to come back to that. She's like, yeah,
but
he might be into
yeah.
it, I think.
One of my main notes for this scene is breaking the house. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they break the whole house after this conversation. There's so many things that happen. There's like this slide across the whole table. Then Faith takes the whole silverware drawer out and has the courtesy to empty it.
And then
throwing it.
So nice.
Which I thought was like an interesting
thing.
And then
like closes a glass door
on
Buffy as she's passing through, of course.
Oh.
The contractors in Sunnydale, like that's the industry you want to get into.
Right? Do you think Joyce took out extra insurance after she found out that Buffy was the slayer?
God, I hope so.
She's like, I'm upping my coverage. And they're like, any life changes that we need to know about? And she's like, no,
my daughter's a slayer.
No, she definitely insurance fraud is happening.
Yeah.
So,
and Buffy's like, maybe we forgot about you because we wanted to. That sounds like the lady doth protest too much.
It does.
Methinks, business.
It is. It's like what you say to somebody who you love and you want to hurt in that moment, I think. It sounds like what you say to like a gal pal who broke your heart, and this is what you do to a gal pal who knifed you in the gut, you know?
You know what else you do to them?
What do you do? Put a fidget spinner on your
hand. You spin their fidget if you possibly can.
Yeah, you spin their fidget. Sometimes my only role is to like repeat what you said to make sure that everyone else heard it, you know? Everyone now heard the joke. Faith is like the cops. And it's like, my question here is she panicked? Is she afraid of the cops? Is that what?
No, she wants to spin the fidget before the cops.
Just in time. That's my thing. It's like, she's like, now's the time.
So that Buffy will be in Faith's body, but unconscious. As the cops arrive.
If only listeners at home could see Jenny's shit-eating grin.
How dare you?
Yeah, my note is fidget spinner activate.
And then big face punch, unconscious, after the magical flooshes. And then Joyce is like,
magical flooshes.
Are you okay? And Buffy's like, 5x5.
And we're all like,
what?
Also, there's a tiny little moment where Giles walks in and there are three men who say, hello, Rupert.
They say Ripper, actually.
They say Ripper?
That's right.
Rupert. Ha ha.
We'll see about that.
Oh, wow. Jenny just challenged you all.
No, I mean, I guess I'm clearly outnumbered.
Because they're...
I heard what I heard.
Okay, well, we can't talk about... Okay.
Anyway. These guys are wearing a lot of leather jackets, and they seem very dark ops. I feel like they'd be calling him Ripper.
Okay,
but that's
okay.
Just me.
All right, hey, listen, to each his
but
own.
But also, I have stupid American ears, so who knows what I heard. Is it the magical time come for the most blessed
I believe
portion
it has,
of the episode?
Jenny. I do want to say, though, before we go to the magical time in this episode, known as Sexual Tension Awards, don't you worry, we'll get there. I do want to take a moment to first of all say we have had so much fun at the Vampire Ball.
And in your wonderful, wonderful city, well, I'm sure it's not all of your city, but a lot of you, it's your city and your country, and it's just been very wonderful to us. We've had a great time. I've had a lot of questions.
Oh, yes. What are they?
So I just want to, like, talk about them for a second. Let's see where they are in my notes. Okay. My London list.
Run down the big cues.
I'm going to save the first one for last because we got the answer. And Jenny, do you remember it? Because you have to explain it to them. Okay. So my London list is, why are the streets so small? In America, they measured the car and they were like, okay, we'll give you like a foot on either side. Maybe two.
Because you're all a mess. Yeah. You're going to need the space.
Here, they were like, you guys got this. Car is 16 feet. Road, 16 feet. Like every time we're in a car, I'm like, will we fit? No, we will. We will. Outlets. Why? I don't, and this isn't like a you should have my outlets thing. I just don't understand how we got to the point in our world where we all have different outlets. Why didn't anyone talk to each other?
Well, because you couldn't plug in the cordless phone.
Oh, they were like, we don't have a plug.
Electricity was being harnessed to call across the pond and say, how many prongs? What shape? How far apart?
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know, a question. And I'm sure either someone will tell us or you can write in at bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com and let me know. I also want to let you know I ate mushy peas. And I liked them.
Yay!
I was so excited. Like, I ordered it and I didn't realize it. And I was with my friend Megan, who lives here. And there was like, I got fish and chips. I was being very like, you know, local flavor. And it came with like tartar sauce. And then there was this little thing of green. And I was like, what is that? And she's like, oh, that's mushy peas. And I was like, shut up. She had no idea why I was so excited about mushy peas. I was like, Giles ate them. And she's like, who's Giles? Doors, where are they and why are there so many? I've just had a difficult time getting into buildings here because there's so many doors and none of them are open. Oh, they don't open, you know? And also 22 degrees Celsius is 71 degrees Fahrenheit. That was just a little math I did. I was proud of it. And my last question was, why do we drive on opposite sides of the street? And someone told us this, and I, like, retain information, but I'm not as smart as Jenny, who retains it and, like, understands it. So she'll explain to you if you don't know.
You know already, but...
No, they don't all know.
Well, it has to do with swords, doesn't it? You want to approach on your sword hand side.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole deal was that Napoleon was left-handed.
Right.
And so France...
You're doing great so far.
Thank you.
So France.
And so France, of course, did it on the other side, because when you're, I don't know, whatever what you would call Napoleon, an emperor. That's one way to say it, I guess. I was going to say, like, overlord or something.
I don't know.
It's all very confusing for us. We have a different system.
Yeah. Wow, nice one, Jenny.
Thank you.
Good dig.
So he had everything swapped over to the other side, and America sided with the French in some important thing.
Wow, you're doing exactly what I would have done.
The building of roads. Yeah. Perhaps not.
And so now you're driving on the other side of the street.
Desperately trying to not feel like we're about to crash every time we get in a vehicle.
Now that we've told you that sexy story about swords, Dave, will you kindly play the jingle that says Sexual Tension Award?
Yes! So this is the part of the podcast where we traditionally list off four potential pairings for you to vote on who had the most tense sexual activity or
lack thereof.
Or lack thereof. Or just, you know, impending.
Sexual Tension Award, : for best impending.
Yeah, you get it. So usually, you know, it'll be like, oh, Band Candy, Giles and Joyce, whatever, you know. And then you can vote.
Yes.
On our Twitter. We'll post a poll. We're at Buffering Cast. And you can vote in this beautiful democracy that we've created around theoretical sexual tension and real sexual tension in every episode of the show. So today's nominees have a very specific thing in common.
Mm-hmm.
And
why don't we stagger them?
Oh, yes, let's. Okay, so first nominee for this episode's Sexual Tension Award pairing is Buffy and Faith, of course.
Of course.
Well, how could it not be?
The second nominee for the Sexual Tension Award is Buffy and Faith.
Nice. Really nice. Okay, and then who do we have third?
This one comes first.
Oh, yes, of course, it's the third nominee is Buffy and Faith.
And just to make sure that this is fair, the fourth nominee is Buffy and Faith. Jenny has added a little flavor to these. Would you like to discuss some of the nuance that goes into each category?
Sure. The first nominee pairing is nominated specifically for Are You Ever Gonna Take This Thing Out?
Yeah. The second is for Everything Is All Wet.
Sure, sure. The third pairing was, of course, for the college beefstick jealousy incident.
And the fourth one is the sporting goods nostalgia, you know, that old want, take, have.
Yes, yes, yes. So please, please cast your vote. We'll be posting the poll online just after this episode goes up.
Yeah.
Make your voice heard. It's very important. This is going to be a tight race, I know.
Yeah.
But we'll just see who lands on top.
Yeah, we'll get their addresses in the meanwhile. Oh, Jenny. Wow. Thank you all so much for being here.
Please,
as
thank you.
Part of this joyous occasion. We have, again, had the best time. We love you. And I think that's all we need to say. Do we need to say anything?
Well, traditionally, at the end of the episode, we say until next time, and then we howl.
Right.
Would you be willing to howl with us?
I also want to let you all know that if you're here in London with us, we have Smash the Demon Lizard Patriarchy shirts that are still available down in the autograph room. So they'll be down there after this and also when we're doing some signings at 4 o'clock. And now...
Beautiful. Beautiful. And now, till next time. Really nice. Thanks so much.
I didn't think we'd meet again. They all said you wouldn't wake, but still I held my breath. Maybe we gave each other wounds that couldn't mend, but I always hoped we'd meet again. It's like, oh, no one else could ever really know me. Oh, in the way that only you could know me. Oh, and it doesn't have to be the way it seems when you see me in your dreams. Still pulled apart by hate and fear. And if I'm honest, I'd rather burn than disappear. But I never thought we'd end up here. It's like, oh, somehow I knew this day was always coming. Oh, the endless weight of always fighting something. Oh, it doesn't have to be as hurtful as it seems. I'm not your enemy. My girlfriend's back, and we're gonna be in trouble. trouble. Yeah, we're gonna be in trouble. Left your world, came back to mine. But part of me was on the lookout this whole time.
I guess it's true. No one else could ever really know me. Ooh, in the way that only you could know me. Survive, and I'm feeling 5 by 5.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.